We're holding on Kuf Ayin Dalet Omer Aleph, the second line. We learned in the Mishnah Machloikas of the Chachamim, of the Tanakhama, and of Shimon Gamliel about whether you're allowed to collect from the Orev if the Loiva has Nechosim. The Mishnah had said that you can't collect from the Orev first, you have to go after the Loiva first. If the Loiva doesn't have, So the Mishnah just said that you can't collect from the Orev unless you said Almanas, unless you said on condition that I can collect from either one I want. And Rav Shimon Gamliel had said either way, if the Loiva has Nechosim, then you can't collect from the Orev. We clarified in the Gemara that the Mishnah is Chasuri Mechsera. What it means to say is that you can't collect from the Orev first unless you made a Tanai and the Loiva has no Nechosim. Unless the Orev is not a regular Orev, but rather an Orev Kablon, which we're going to go define now in the Gemara what an Orev Kablon is. And Rav Shimon Gamliel would say that either way, whether it's an Orev, whether it's a regular Orev or whether it's an Orev Kablon, either way you can't collect from the Orev unless the Loiva has no Nechosim. So that's the Machlokas basically. So the Gemara says, Omer Rabba Baba Chana, Omer Rabba Bar Chana, Omer Bichana. Say what?
What's the machlokes?
That's what we just said. The machlokes is the machlokes in the end is if the orev is a kablon, are you allowed to collect from him ahead of the loiva? The chachamim say yes because he's a kablon. Reb Shimon Gamliel says if the loiva has nechostim, then still not. So the Gemara says Omer Rabba Bar Chana, Omer Rabbi Yochanan. Or Rabba Bar Chana is how we usually have it in the Gemara. But anyway, Kol Mokum Shoshana Reb Shimon Gamliel B'Mishnah Seinu, any place in our Mishnayos, meaning specifically in our Mishnayos, as opposed to Brisas, anywhere where Reb Shimon Gamliel says something in our Mishnayos, Halacha K'moisei, then the Halacha is like him, Chutz, with three exceptions, and the first one of them is our Mishnah, Me'orev, the case of the Orev of our Mishnah, the halacha is like the Chachamim, that if he's a Kablon, then you can collect from him first. The Tzidon, and a case in Gittin, in Tzid, with a get that took place in the city of Tzidon, Sidon, however we pronounce it exactly. There was a case over there where a person divorced his wife and said that the divorce will take effect on Almanas, that she gives him a certain item of clothing of his, and that clothing got lost. So the Tanakhama would say in that case, then the get is bottle because she can't give it to him. And according to Reb Shimon Gamliel, she can give him the value of it. And Reb Shimon Gamliel says there was such a case in the city of Tzidon. And the third one, Raya Achroina, the third one is the second case of Raya, which is in Sanhedrin. So we'll be getting to it in about a month's time, Be'ez Hashem. There you have a couple of machloikas in of Reb Shimon Gamliel and the Chachamim about a person who Beis Din tells him, you have a claim over here in Beis Din, go bring your Edim or go bring your Raya. So you have two cases over there. Where he needs time to bring his raya, and then he doesn't manage to get it in time. So, or you have one case where he said where they give him a certain deadline to bring them, and he doesn't bring them by that deadline. And you have another case where he says he doesn't have, and later on he finds. In any case, you have one such case over there, the second case involving raya, where Reb Shimon Gamliel says that fine, when he finds his raya, he can still bring it, and the Chachamim disagree. So Reb Yochanan is saying in that case, the halacha in that particular case, the halacha is not like him. Now, first of all, the Gemara in the first of all, what is the reason behind that? Why indeed would we say that in general the halacha is like Reb Shimon Gamliel, except for these three cases? So the reason would be the Yerushalmi brings an expression halachas ktsuvos hayomer mipi beis dinai. Reb Shimon Gamliel was saying established halachas in the name of his beis din. Meaning, in other words, that when we say that Reb Shimon Gamliel says something, generally speaking, it means, and the other Chachamim of his Beis Din agreed with him as well. What does that mean? There's an interesting explanation from Dodos HaRishonim, Sefer on Jewish History. He says, in the times of Reb Shimon Gamliel, there was a long period of time, he learns on the basis of various things in the Gemara, there was a period of time where it was impossible for Reb Shimon Gamliel to meet together with the other Chachamim because the Romans had him under suspicion. He's the Nasi. They figure he's from Malchus Beis David. You never know. The Jews are trying to reestablish their kingship. This was a few years after the war Bar Kokhba and all of that. So therefore, so for a long period of time, he had to stay apart from the Chachamim. So what would happen is when they wanted to issue a certain halacha, then they would debate it among themselves. They'd send it to him for ratification. He would agree to it, and then it was published under his name. So basically, in other words, when you have, for the most part, that it says Reb Shimon Gamliel said something, it would mean that the other Chachamim had first debated it among themselves, come to a conclusion, and then presented it to Reb Shimon Gamliel for him to sign off on it, basically. In any case, so now Reb Yochanan is saying that you have three exceptions to that, which are the three exceptions he just listed. With that said, the Gemara itself does mention in a few places that not all the Amiroyim agree that Reb Yochanan said that, and in fact, a number of the Rishonim say that it's not an ironclad rule. In any case, the point is here, definitely the halacha is not like Reb Shimon Gamliel. The halacha is like the Chachamim, that when the guy is a kablon, then you can collect from him first. What exactly the difference is between a kablon and not? Well, so the Gemara is going to go now through the various possibilities, what kind of lushan he would use that would make him a kablon versus an orev. Now you have, for example, nowadays in a ksuba, we very commonly write in a tsnoim, and in a ksuba, we very commonly write, actually, I don't remember if in a ksuba, but in a tsnoim anyway, we definitely write orev kablon, so then it's clear he's accepting on himself the responsibilities of a kablon, which we're saying is a higher level. So you have and Rashi elsewhere, and the Rashbam earlier in our Masechta explains that the kablon means in Meloshin Kibel, he received the money on behalf of the borrower. So in other words, Reuven is lending money to Shimon, and the Orev Kablon is being the go-between and saying, here, you, Reuven, you give me the money, and I'll pass it along to Shimon. So that would be, according to that way of looking at it, would be that he becomes an Orev Kablon. Then you have here the Gemara is saying that it depends on the lashon he uses, and in fact other Rishonim, the Rashba and the Ritva, explain that that's when we have what the Gemara is going to say over here about the lashon that he uses. It has nothing to do with him accepting the physical money and giving it to the other person. He's called a kablon because he was makabel that he a higher responsibility to pay back the loan. In fact, those who shown him say, based on the continuation of the Gemara over here, that if it was Nos of a Nos and Biyad, if he actually took the money from Reuven and gave it to Shimon, then he would have an even higher degree of responsibility than a Kablon. He would actually be considered the borrower. He would be considered the borrower himself as well. With everything that entails. Then the Rashba brings, and the Rosh also brings, and they say kind of a compromise. They say, you know what, fine, like all Gemara is saying, usually just the wording that he uses is enough, but by Ksuba is different, because by Ksuba, after all, it's one thing by a loan, as the Gemara is going to discuss over here throughout in the sugya. With a loan, you actually the lender is currently losing out money. After all, he's giving out money to the other guy, as opposed to by a ksuba, the woman is not giving out money at the time. She's giving out herself, basically. She's agreeing to be married to this guy. So therefore, you could argue that for him to be a kablon requires something different than just saying that he's going to be a kablon. Maybe it would require that he receives something that there are metaltlin that the husband set aside for the purpose of paying the ksuba, and then he receives them and actually physically hands them over to her. Anyway, so the Gemara says, Amar Rav Huna, halvehu vani orev. So again, in our scenario over here, we have Reuven the lender and Shimon the borrower, and we have Levi the orev. So Rav Huna says, here are some of the lashonis that would be enough to make him, that would make the difference between an orev and an orev kablon. Halvehu vani orev, if Levi says to Reuven, lend Shimon the money and I'll be the Orev. Halvehu vani pereya, or he says, lend him and I'll pay him. Halvehu vani chayev, or lend him and I'll be chayev. Halvehu vani noisin, or a different girsa etin, lend him and I am giving it, or I will give it. All of those, kolon loshen arevus hein. All of those are a loshen of arevus, which would mean the lower level of responsibility. So then, As the Mishnah had said, if the loiva has nechosim and the loiva is in town, then you have to go after him first. And that would mean, actually, even if he doesn't have nechosim, you first have to take him to Beis Din. You first have to take Shimon to Beis Din and demand the repayment from him. And only if he doesn't want to come to Beis Din or he's out of town or whatever, then you can go after Levi the Arev. And the point is because in all these cases he used the loshen of halva, lend him, meaning that he will be the loiva, and if he can't pay or he won't pay or whatever, then I'll pay, etc. On the other hand, continues Rav Huna, ten loivani kablon. But on the other hand, if he says give to him and I'll be the kablon, ten loivani perdea, give it to him and I'll pay back. Ten loivani chayev, give it to him, and I'll be chayev. Ten loivani noisen or etain, call them loshen kablonus, saying all of those are the loshen of kablonus, because there he didn't use the word halva. There he said ten loy, so meaning give it to him, which means, in other words, in effect, you're saying that the oriv becomes a shliach to do that. So therefore, so now he'd be an oriv kablon, and therefore he might be on the hook for it, even if the loiva is in town, and even if he has nechosim. Depending on the machlok, depending what we said before, according to the chachamim, given we said the halacha is not like Reb Shimon Gamliel, since he's a kablon, then yes, he put him in a kablon. He is able to collect from the kablon, even though the loiva has nechosim. So that's the first set of differences in the Loshen. Again, according to some Rishonim, it's not enough. According to Rashi elsewhere in the Rashbam earlier in Or Masechta, it would also have to be that he actually takes the money and gives it to the other one. According to many other Rishonim, it would be enough that he says one of these Loshonos. And according to some, it's a difference between whether we're talking about an Orev for a regular debt versus for a Ksuba. Next, the Gemara asks, what about Iboilahu? So now we have a question based on what Rav Huna said. What about Halvehu Vani Kablon Tenloi Vani Orev Mai? The distinction we made so far is between whether he tells him Halvehu, lend him, or whether he says Tenloi, give him. But what about if he kind of mixes and matches? If he uses the word Halvehu, but he says the word Kablon. Or he says tenloy, which we said give to him, which implies not a halva, but in other words, a shliach, vani orev, but he says, I will be an orev. Mai, so what would be the din? Which one do we go according to? On the one hand, he's saying, in the first case, he's saying halvehu, but he's saying kablon. And in the second case, he's saying tenloy, but he's saying orev. So which one would it be? Maybe would we go basically according to the beginning of what he said or according to the end? Amr Rabbi Yitzchak, Loshen Arevos, Arevos, Loshen Kablonus, Kablonus. So Rabbi Yitzchak says, it's very simple. You go according to the end of what he said. If he said the word Arevos, if he said the word Orev, then it's regular Arevos. If he says Kablonus, then Kablonus. So it doesn't really matter, in other words, whether he had said Tenloy or Halvehu. Either way, we go according to what whether he actually used the word Orev or kablon. So we focus on that. We don't care whether he said halvehu or tenloy. Rabbeinu Gersha makes the point that it may be one of these cases of tfois loshen achron, that we go according to the second loshen, which would mean, in other words, if he had flipped it around, if he had said, for example, I'll be an orev and you give him, then according to Rabbeinu Gersha, we might well say that he's a kablon. According to the Rashbam, the implication seems to be there's no difference. So now all of this was one opinion so far. However, the Gemara says, Rav Chista Omar Kulam Loshen Kablonus saying Barme Halvehu Vani Orev. Rav Chista says that no, of all the Lashonis that Rav Huna brought, all of them are going to be that he's making himself a Kablon, the higher level of responsibility, with the exception of the one Halvehu Vani Orev. So if he says Halvehu Vani Orev, so he's mentioning Halva, not Tenloy, and he's saying I'm an Orev, then we would say that he's a regular Orev, not an Orev Kablon. But other than that, any other Loshen, whether he says Vani Perea, Vani Chayev, Vani Noisin, etc., all of those, even though he said Halvehu, would be enough to make him an Orev Kablon. And similarly, any And similarly, any loshen of ten loy is going to make him a kablon as well, says Rav Chista. Rava Amar, Rava says on the contrary, kulon loshen arevus. Most of these loshonis that Rav Huna had said are actually a loshen of arevus, regular arevus. Even if he said kablon, as long as he mentioned halva, bar mi ten loy vani noisin, with the exception of where he says give to him and I will give to you. So since he mentioned a loshen of giving at both ends, or that Ashbam explains kolshekin, if he said ten loy vani kablon, then he would be a kablon, but only in those cases. Not if he says any loshen of halva, and not if he says any other loshen of paying or chayav or whatever. And then Rava says that would make him only an orev and not an orev kablon. So the Rashbam points out that Rava, being the, we have a general rule from the time of Abaya and Rava and on, halacha kibasroi, the halacha is usually like the later authorities. So in this case, Rava being the latest of all of these chachamim, he's a generation after Rav Huna and Rav Chista and Rav Yitzchak, then the halacha would in fact be like him, that in most of these cases he's an orev and not a kablon. There are some cases within that where Tosfos and there are certain cases where Tosfos and Rabbeinu Yona and others argue with the and Yad Ramah argue with the Rashbam on details of this. We learned yesterday, Tosfos had given a summary of the basic dinim of Orev, and Tosfos, one thing, had drawn a distinction between whether he had used an expression, a French expression, that meant that I will give you versus that I will pay you. Tosfos had drawn the distinction. He used an expression, I want to give you versus I want to pay you. There can be a difference. There can be a difference in that, whether that makes him an Orev or a Kablon. And then you have, in addition, also here we're saying, the way we just learned is there are three different opinions on the subject. You have Rav Huna, Rav Chista and Rava, whereas according to the Yad Ramah, he says that no, Rava is not actually arguing with Rav Huna. He's just arguing on here. We had the Gemara had asked, what about when he says halveu vani kablon or tenloi vani orev? So Rabbi Yitzchok says it depends whether he said orev or kablon, and Rav Chista said all of them would be kablonos with one exception. So Rava would be arguing on that point, not necessarily is he arguing on Rav Huna himself. So in summary, basically, so you have, so again, Rav Huna is going to just draw the distinction whether he used the word tenloi or halvehu. Halvehu makes him an orev, tenloi makes him a kablon. According to Rav Yitzchak didn't address most of the cases, but he just addressed the case where you had halvehu with the word kablon or tenloi and the word orev, and he says then it'll depend whether you said orev or kablon. According to the Rashbam, doesn't matter the order. According to Rabbeinu Gershom, it would matter, the order would matter. According to Rav Chista, there would be according to Rav Chista, at least the surface way that we learn Rav Chista, that he's that Rav Chista is definitely arguing with Rav Huna. So according to him, most of the expressions would make him a kabbalon. And according to Rava, all the cases of halvehu would make him an orev. And as far as the cases of tenloi, some of them he'd be an orev, some of them he'd be a kablon. And within that there's a machlokas who's showing him about which ones he means are which. In any case, so you have all that again. So you have all this whole distinction as far as the wording that he uses, and then in addition, you also have on top of that, you have the point that's made in other sugyas in Shas, where Rashi and Rashbam discuss that maybe a kablon actually has to take the money from one and physically give it to the other. Whereas according to some Rishonim, on the contrary, we would say in that case that would make him even more than a kablon. That would make what the Gemara is going to say yisav yitin biyad, that he actually picks up the money and gives it to the other one physically. Okay, so the Gemara continues. So Mar Bar Amemar says to Rav Ashi, this is what my father said, my father being Amemar, if he says an expression, if the Orev says an expression, give him and I will give, then in effect it means that the Orev himself is the Loiva. means ein la malva la loiva klum, means then the malva has no claim against the loiva at all, meaning he could only go to the orev, because by saying ten loiva vani noisim lacha mean or then it would mean, in other words, in effect what he's saying is that I'm taking out the loan myself, and then fine, it's my business, I'll go and give the money over to Shimon, who actually needed to borrow it. But the Gemara says, "Veloihi, that's not so. The halacha is not like that. Loi mifta, loiva minei de malva ad sheyisav yitin biyad. The loiva will be potter from the malva completely only if the orev actually takes the money from the malva and gives it to the loiva. So now the orev himself becomes the malva in effect. And therefore now when Reuven wants to collect the debt, then he's not going after Shimon at all. Then he's going first after Levi, who actually physically took the money and gave it to him." But otherwise, any other case, then you have, he still is an Orev, or an Orev Kabbal, and as the case may be, and in general, that would mean that, as we've been learning throughout the sugya so far, you do have to go after the Orev first. Another point, actually, the Rosh makes a point in this connection that at least we're talking about over here, where previously the Loiva, Shimon, had talked with Reuven about lending him money. If Shimon never even talked to Reuven in the first place, if Levi of his own volition goes to Reuven and says, you know, I know Shimon needs to borrow money, and so lend it to him, and I'm willing to be an Orev or a Kablon, then actually, then even if Shimon does physically come and pick up the money, then Levi the Orev would still be the Loiva, because Shimon hadn't even prearranged the loan with Reuven. It was Levi the Orev who did all that. So that would be another case where Levi takes Shimon's place basically as the Loiva. Okay. So the Gemara tells the case. Ahu Dayana, there was a certain Dayan, the Achse la Malva la Nichse de Loiva, Mikame de Litbe la Loiva. He allowed a Malva to go into the Nechosim of the Loiva to start collecting from them before he had actually gone and even taken the Loiva to Beis Din and demanded that he pay the debt. So basically, this Dayan kind of jumped the gun over here. Listen, I know that Pliny owes you money, so go ahead and start collecting from him, even though he hadn't yet taken him to Beis Din. Salkir of Chonin Bereidir of Yeva, said Rav Chonin Bereidir of Yeva fired that Dayan, because he had paskin wrongly, and the concern is he's gonna paskin wrongly in this kind of case. You never know, he might make mistakes, worse mistakes like that in other cases that he judges. There is some discussion about that. Is that always the case that a dayan makes a mistake like that? You can right away fire him. It is one point is the Tashbetz deals with Sitchdinim. What happens? A dayan taka makes a mistake like that, and we're going to learn in Sanhedrin and in a couple of weeks, Bez Hashem, we're going to learn all about these dinim of Tor B'dvar Mishnah versus Tor B'Shikol Adas. When a dayan makes a mistake, what's the nature of his mistake and what that means in terms of reversing the judgment, etc. So the Tashbetz actually says that not always are we going to fire a dayan for such mistakes over here. So here it might have been a one-off kind of thing. It might even be actually that the Tashbetz maybe means that maybe understands Salke Rav Chanan Breder Rav Yeva. It doesn't mean that he fired him. It just means that he told this malva, you have to get out of the property because you don't have any rights to it yet. So Omar Rava, so Rava comments on that. Man chakim lemerbet ki hamilsa ki ilav Rav Chanan b'reid Rav Yeva. Who would be so wise as to do that, to fire the dayan, according to the general understanding of the story, if not for Rav Chanan b'reid Rav Yeva, that he realized something that might not be so obvious? Kosovar, namely, Rav Chanan holds nichsid bar inish inunat ma'arvin yosei. A person's own nechosim are his orev. Meaning, in other words, even if you don't have an actual, you don't have an actual person, an orev over here, nevertheless, you still have nechosim. Your nechosim function as your orev. Now, since we've been learning all along that you have to go after the loiva first rather than after the orev, Well, then, now we learn in our Mishnah, that if you lend somebody money with an Orev, you can't collect from the Orev first. But Kaimalon, and the Mishnah had said you can't collect from the Orev, but Kaimalon, and we explain in the Gemara, Lo Yitba Orev Tchila means you can't dun the Orev first. First, you have to take the Loiva to Beis Din, see if he's willing to pay. And only then, if he doesn't, then you start going after the Orev. So the same way over here. This Dayan should have known that first you have to take the loiva to Beis Din, see whether he has something else that he's willing to pay with. Does he have metaltlin? Does he whatever? Then if he doesn't, then you start going after his nechosin. So here, where this Dayan instead just said to the malva, you go ahead and start taking from the nechosin, then that was wrong of him. It means he made a mistake in something that stated clearly in a Mishnah, and therefore that Dayan deserves to be fired. Although again, maybe this was a one-off case where he fired him. Maybe in general, we wouldn't necessarily do that. And the point is, again, the Nemuka Yosef says the concern is just as much as he made a mistake in this, you never know what else he might make a mistake in, which is why Rab Chanan fired him as a dayan. And then in this connection, the Chiddush Arim makes a point that here the Gemara is going to explain soon that a Baal Choiv has a mitzvah to pay off his debt. So that means, in other words, so the Loiva himself has that responsibility. If he doesn't, then we collect Baal Korchoi. But the Lachatchila, we want him to do the mitzvah B'gufoi, so therefore we first have to take him to Beis Din, and if not, then we can say that that's the equivalent of taking the Orev to Beis Din without first going to the Loiva. Another case, the Gemara says, "Hahu arva diyasmi." There was an orev for a choiv involving yisoimim. So the loiv had passed away. He left children behind, and there was an orev who had been and there was an orev who was involved over here. Depare la malva mikamid liyasmi. This orev went and paid off the malva before he informed the yisoimim that he plans to do that. So now the Orev goes to the Yisoimim and says, you know, listen, now I need reimbursement. So we're talking about it was the Yad Ramah points out it was a milva b'shtar over here, because otherwise, since the father, if it was a milva al peh, since the father himself could claim that he paid it off, then we Beis Din would make that claim on behalf of the Yisoimim, and then we would tell the Orev, well, it may have well have already been paid off without you knowing it, and then tough luck. But so we're talking about it was a milva b'shtar, so such an argument is not possible. Nevertheless, here, if the Orev had informed them ahead of time, maybe they would have paid it themselves. Tosfos says, okay, if they didn't want to pay, then yes, the malva would collect from the Orev, and that would be the equivalent of the loiva not having nechosim. And then later on, he could go to the Yisoimim to collect. Otherwise, Tosfos says, "What are you going to say? That what are you going to say? The Orev is going to say that you have to wait to be paid until I go and hire myself out and have enough nechosim to buy. No, you don't work that way. So therefore, but here the problem was that he didn't inform the Yisoimim ahead of time. Amar Papa. So the Papa says, listen, we have to figure it like this. Prius Baal Choiv mitzvah, to pay a Baal Choiv is a mitzvah. So in other words, it's not an absolute obligation. In general, when the Gemara uses the word mitzvah, it usually means something less than chiyuv. In Gemara terminology, when you say that something is choiva, means it's absolutely required. When you say mitzvah, it basically means it's the right thing to do, but Beis Din is not going to force you to do it, essentially. So the basis of paying a baal choiv is... So what it is like this. The original debt was with a shtar, says the Yad Ramah. But here, the Rashbam points out, once the Orev paid it, then it becomes a milva al peh. So now the Yisoimim, being below by mitzvah, they're not of the age to be required to do mitzvahs yet. So it's only a mitzvah. The Yasmi, la b'nei mevin mitzvah ninu, Yisoimim are not of the age where they can be required to do to do such a mitzvah. So therefore, yes, he's going to have to wait at this point until the Yisoimim are older, And then he can take him to Beis Din and say that he's going to get reimbursed then. But until then, they're not chayiv in the mitzvah yet. The Rashbam refers to a case earlier in the Masechta where we had something where we had as a case involving Rava Bar Sharshum in the third parak. There was a case where Rava Bar Sharshum was owed money by Yisoimim, and what he did was he figured he has in his possession a mashkanta. He has a piece of land that their father had mortgaged to him. So he figured that he's going to hold on to that land for now and continue to use it until the debt has been paid off via the payers of the karka. So he figured he was going to do that, and Abaya tells him that's not going to work because the fact is that everybody knows that this land belongs to the Yisoimim, and therefore it makes it look like you're taking this property from them illegally. In fact, the Gemara says over there that was what was going on in the first place. There was a rumor going around that he's illegally occupying property of Yisoimim. So Abaya tells him, no, you're going to have to return them that land when they get older. Then again, they're children. You can't obligate them to do a mitzvah yet of paying off a baal chayv, so you return them the land now, and you're just going to have to wait with getting the debt paid off until they're gdolim, until they become bar mitzvah, and then you can deal with them as far as that. So the same way over here, in other words, the Ariv has paid, he's going to have to wait with him with being paid back until the Yisoimim are older. Again, what's the point that he hadn't informed them? So Tosfos says, because the point is, if he had informed them, then they might have agreed to pay on their own, and then the Orev wouldn't have been on the hook in the first place. So that's the problem, that he didn't inform them. The Meiri makes a different point. He says we can actually be talking about Yisoimim Gdolim. We can be talking about they are adults. And the thing is, if he had informed them, then they themselves would become the Balei Chayv to him. The problem is that he didn't inform them, and so now afterwards, it's basically he's trying to collect, as the Rashbam said, a milval peh, and therefore, as it's only a mitzvah for them to pay back, then therefore we can't put them on the hook for that yet. So that's one reason then why the Ariv in this case is not going to be able to collect from them as of now. Then the Gemara brings another reason. Rav Huna Bre de Rishua gives a different reason why the Ariv is not going to be able to collect from them. Emor, because we may well say, Srori Akpase, it may well be that the father, before he passed away, In fact, the Rashbam explains, Rav Huna Bre de Rishua would say, no, you're telling me that Prius Baal Chayv is only a mitzvah, it's not a chayva, and therefore you can't put it on the Yisoimim. No, absolutely, they do have to pay it back. The reason is, he's going to have to wait until they get older, because meanwhile, their father may have given the Loivet Srori, he may have given him a bundle of money to pay off the debt, to pay off the debt, and that way the Ariv doesn't have to get involved over here. So now it becomes essentially a milval peh, and the father may well have paid it, and we have to, and we based in have to make the claim on behalf of the Yisoimim that their father may have paid it. The Rashbam points out we're gonna have later on at the very end of the Masechta, we're gonna talk about where a guy passed away, and we don't say that he paid off the debt, and we do demand it from the Yisoimim. That's different. We're talking about over there where we know that he didn't pay it. For example, Beis Din put him in Chirim for not paying, and he died still in Chirim, and he never bothered to go to Beis Din and tell them, you know what, I did pay it off, or he himself admitted before he died that he still owes the money. But here we're not talking about either of those cases. So there is the real possibility that maybe he even gave the malva in advance before he died a bundle of money to pay off the debt, and therefore now when the Orev paid it off, then he's already paying off a debt that was already paid off, and therefore that we can't hold the Yisoimim responsible now when they're children. We have to wait until they're older, and then we'll straighten things out over there.
If the father wanted to prevent the problem and he had Srari put away for the payment. So if he went that far, I'm assuming that he would have some type of receipt, a shiver, that he paid it, because he just wants to prevent them, his children, from being bothered. So then if he's not going to have a receipt, then he's not going to gain anything, because then the guy can come collect again.
Well, okay, it may be that he trusted him that he's not going to collect again. But whatever, the point is that there is this possibility There is this, but actually, there was, so there is actually an explanation. There was actually an explanation from the Yad Ramah that the Tsurari Atpa say that he gave him Tsurari may refer to the Orev. Whatever the case, yeah, you're asking why there wouldn't be a receipt in that case. Okay, he might not have. He might not. excuse me. He might not have had the opportunity to do that, let's say. The point is, in other words, basically that still there is that concern, and therefore we can't, therefore, and we based enough to advance on behalf of the Yisomim any claim that we can, and therefore we can't allow this Orev to be paid back by the Yisomim until we straighten them, and until we straighten this out, and this is going to have to wait until the Yisomim are older.
Sometimes we make the collector swear, right? When it comes to Yisomim. You say that we owe you money.
In general, you want to collect from your son, and you have to swear. That's true. But in addition, in this case, you can't even swear necessarily. You can't even swear necessarily because of either of these considerations. And therefore that he can't collect at all, even with a shvur, until we straighten that out. The Rashbam goes on and discusses in some detail. First of all, the halacha is like Rav Huna Breda Rav Yeshua that we don't do this point that Rav Papa had said that the Yisomim are not obligated to do a mitzvah. No, in general, we will require them to give. Even when they're children, we're not going to wait until they grow up, only in a case where we have reason to be concerned, only in a case where we have to be concerned about Tsurari. And then the Rashbam goes on to discuss, by the way, that here we're talking about that in general, debts like this are collected from Karka, not from the Metaltlin. After the Takonas HaGaonim, there was a Takona of the Gaonim that eventually to be able to collect in all cases from the Metaltlin instead of Karka, because there came a point when Jews in general were not owning land in most places throughout Golos. So then you can collect from the Talmud as well. So the Rashbam discusses all of these points. So nowadays, in other words, in short, he says there is more of an ability to collect such things. After all, you don't want Shalotino Delos Bifne Loven is always a consideration. You don't want to have that the door is going to be locked and people are not going to want to lend out money. But again, the point is that Tsurari over here is not necessarily actually, so Rishonim discussed that Tsurari, for one thing, is not necessarily meant to pay off the debt completely. It's basically kind of like a mashkin to give. Because after all, you do have like this. There is a point that the Gemara makes elsewhere that a person doesn't usually pay his debt before it actually comes due. So here we're talking about that it's before the debt is actually due. If it was due already, then the malva would have been taking him to Beis Din. So it's more in the nature of a mashkin. And then one point is precisely because there was so again there is that maybe though he could conceivably use the mashkin to collect the debt from it, but even if not, it means in other words that at least he's more certain that eventually he's going to be able to collect his debt, so therefore maybe the Orev shouldn't have jumped the gun over here and paid off the debt without finding out first whether there are tsurari involved over here. Obviously, if they wrote a shtar about that, then obviously there'd be nothing to talk about. But we're talking about over here. There may not have been a shtar involved, but nevertheless, there is the possibility that that was done. Okay, the Gemara says my benayu. So what's the practical difference between Rav Papa's and Rav Huna's Brei de Rav Yeshua's reasons? Either way, according to either one of them, the Orev cannot collect from the Yisomim until they grow up. And the answer is Ikabenayu Kshachai of Moida. One difference would be, like we just said, where he admitted before he died that he still owes the money. So according to Rav Huna, then he obviously didn't pay off. There were no tsurari involved over there. So according to Rav Huna Brei de Rav Yeshua, there were no tsurari or anything like that. So therefore, because otherwise he would have said so. So therefore, yes, the Orev had every right to go pay off the loan without checking with the Yisomim first. And now later on, he would be able to collect from the Yisomim, even when they're little. Whereas according to Rav Papa's reason, that the Yisomim, that it's only a mitzvah rather than a choiva for them to pay back the debt. And they're ketanim, and you can't impose on them a mitzvah obligation. Then therefore, he still wouldn't be able to be paid back until they're older. So that's one nafkamina. Inami deshamtuhu mes b'shamte. Another nafkamina would be if they put him in cherem and he died still in cherem, where we would say then that again the same idea that there's no question if he had actually paid him off, he would have that shows obviously he didn't pay off. Otherwise, he would have gone to Beis Din and asked them to take off the cherem, because the whole point they did that is because he's not willing to pay because he's disobeying Beis Din. So therefore, in either of those cases, then it's obvious that the debt still has to be paid. So according to Rav Huna Breider of Yeshua, then the Orev pays, now he can go right away and collect from the assignment, whereas according to Rav Papa, he would still have to wait. Again, as the Rashbam had said, the halacha is like Rav Huna Breider of Yeshua, as the Gemara goes on to say various dinim that depend on that, and therefore, as long as we know that the debt wasn't paid off, as long as we know there's no tsurari involved, then yes, he can collect from the yisoyimim even when they're children, primarily from karka, and then after the takonas ha-ga'onim, as I mentioned before, there was a takona of the ga'onim in the middle of the period of the ga'onim. There was a period that when in the various countries of the Golos, in both the Christian and the Muslim lands, it became uncommon for Jews to own land because of goyisha policies against it. So therefore, so the ga'onim at some point made a takona that you can collect from the Taltlin as well, and that affects this as well, and it means that he could collect from the Taltlin of Yisoimim as well. Okay. So the Gemara continues, Shocho Mitam, they sent a message from there, from Eretz Yisrael, that yes, in that kind of case, Shamtuhu Mes B'Shamte, if they put the guy in the father in Cherem for not paying, Mes B'Shamte, and he died still in his Shamta, still in Cherem. The halacha is like Rav Huna, Breder of Yeshua, that you can collect from the Yisoimim, and we don't care about the fact that the Yisoimim are not obligated to do a mitzvah. Are not obligated to do the mitzvah of paying back. Now, the Rashbam points out there are two possible girsois in the Gemara over here. There is a girsa v'hilchasa, and then there's a girsa hilchasa. So the Rashbam prefers the girsa hilchasa, which we have over here, which means that the Shochum Itam, the Chacham of Eretz Yisrael, are making one statement. In a case where the guy died still in Cherem, then the halacha, then we follow Rav Huna Breider of Yeshua, and we allow the Orev to collect directly from the Yisoimim. But then you have the girsa, the hilchsa would be two separate statements. It would be that the chachamim of Eretz Yisrael sent a message. You know, when you're discussing what the cases would be, where there would be a nafkamina, whether you make the yisoimim pay or not. An example of that would be Shamtuhu Mes B'Shamte, when they put him in Cherem and he died in Cherem. Then separately, the Gemara would be saying, V'hilchasa k'Rav Huna Breider of Yeshua, that in general, the halacha is like Rav Huna Breider of Yeshua in this whole point over here about whether we require the Yisoimim to pay or not. So it's two different ways of understanding what the message was and what the Gemara is saying over here. Okay, the Gemara says, Meisvi, though, I have a contradiction on Rav Papa. In any case, he was saying that the halacha is like Rav Huna Breider of Yeshua, but in any case, we have a braisa that seems to contradict Rav Papa. A braisa says, Orev shoy shtar choyv yotze mitachas yodei, if the Orev has the shtar choyv in his possession, and he claims that he paid off the debt, he says to the Yisoimim, he says, I paid off your father's debt. And here I have the shtar. As usual, as we've learned before, when a debt is paid off, usually the malva gives the shtar back to the loiva. In this case, he gave me the shtar since I'm the one who paid him. So now I paid him. And therefore, I want reimbursement from you. So the Braisa says, ain't a goiva, he can't collect from them because, after all, you have the concern, maybe he didn't get it legitimately from the Malva. Maybe the Malva dropped it and the Orev found it. The im kosabai skabalti mimcha, but if the shtar choiv has the Malva actually writing in it the words, I received from you this debt, goiva, then he could collect from the assignment, because then obviously it's not that the Malva dropped it or any such thing, then it's obvious that he actually paid it off. So bishleim lo Rav Huna Breider of Yeshua mashgachas lakshachayev moida. So according to Rav Huna Breider of Yeshua, you have a case where this would apply when the father admitted before he died that he still hadn't paid off the debt, and the Orev now has a proof that he actually paid it. So therefore, they would have to pay. Elul a papa kasha, but according to the papa, who says that the whole point of them paying is based on the point of a mitzvah to pay off the debt of their father, and they're not obligated in that mitzvah yet because they're still ketanim. So kasha. So according to the papa, what is the fact that the Orev has a shtar showing that the Malva received the money from him? How does that make them obligated to pay? And the answer is shiny hossam lahochi torach v'kosav leiskabalti, because you can answer in that case. Normally, after all, when you pay off a debt, you don't usually write anything on the shtar, as we discussed a couple of dafim ago. You give the shtar back to the loiva. You write a shoiver, as the case may be. You don't usually write something right there on the shtar. Here, the malva took the trouble to write on the shtar, I received the payment. So that now it becomes a milva b'shtar. Now the whole point was, we were saying before, if the orev pays off on behalf of the yisomim, then it transforms from a milva b'shtar to a milva al peh. Because now the fact that he paid off the malva is something that happened bal peh, that happened verbally, and the yisomim may not know about it, etc. But here we're saying that when the braisa is describing a case when the malva actually writes clearly on the shtar, I received the money. So now that's very clear that the orev has paid it off. Now it's a milva b'shtar, and a milva b'shtar, a papa will agree that we're going to make the yisomim pay even when they're yisomim. He will have to swear, like we said before, because you have the general rule that when you want to collect from yisomim, you're going to have to swear first. But nevertheless, he will at least be able to collect on the basis of that, because he swears and because he has the shtar. When do we say mitzvah? When do we say that they don't apply, that we don't apply the mitzvah to them, would only be when it was a milva al peh. So that braisa doesn't contradict Rav Papa, but nevertheless, we said, in any case, the halacha is like Rav Huna Breda Rav Yeshua, that it's not a matter of imposing a mitzvah on them or not. It's a matter of whether we have reason to be concerned that the debt was already paid off via tsurari, or at least semi-paid off. And when we don't have that consideration, then we are able to collect from the yisomim even when they're ketanim. Tosfos, actually, there's a long Tosfos that begins on Omer Aleph and goes through the whole sugya over here and discusses details in the sugya in terms of the girsa and in terms of different details over here. So first you have that Rav Huna would say that in this case of Hiskabalti, where he has in the document where he writes over there that I received the debt. So we would say, according to Rav Huna Breda Yeshua, there's obviously no concern of tsurari, but according to the papa, what would be the scenario? According to this girsa, the question is heichi mashka. So here the girsa we have in front of us in the Gemara is kasha. That's just a kasha on Rav Papa. Tosfos is proof at the beginning of the Tosfos. He says the girsa would be heichi mashkachas law. What would be the scenario where writing his kabalti makes a difference? If the father admitted before he died, then it wouldn't matter that he didn't pay off the debt yet. Then what's the difference whether he says his kabalti? So you're gonna say that okay, maybe the malva did not in fact collect from him. So we're saying that no. That's the point. In other words, by writing his skabalti, it makes it clear. So it becomes a milva b'shtar, like the Rashbam said. But then Tosfos goes and discusses and has several questions on that, and says that if the shtar says his skabalti, I received the debt from the orev, meaning, in other words, that the loiva actually writes for the orev in the shtar and says that his skabalti, I received it from him, then it means, in other words, and the point is that kind of forces the loiva to pay off, even if the malva doesn't take him to Beis Din. So then we're saying, according to Rav Huna Breda Yeshua, there's obviously no concern of tsurari, because he writes for the orev, his skabalti, in effect, he's saying, you orev are now becoming the malva, and you can collect yourself, as opposed to when we'd be concerned about tsurari, because maybe he gave tsurari to the original malva. So according to Rav Huna Breda Yeshua, we would understand that scenario. But according to the papa, again, the question is if it's only a matter of a mitzvah. And the answer is, once he writes his kabalti, it means he's telling him that you have the ability to collect from your yisomim as well. So we have, in short, several different ways within Tosfos itself of understanding the Gemara that we just discussed. But in any case, again, the halacha in the end is like Rav Huna, Brei Devishua, that where there's no concern for tzrori, then yes, we are able to collect from Yisraelim. Okay. So the Gemara tells another case. Hahu arva de ovid kechavim. There was a case of an orev on behalf of a loan from a goy. So a yid had borrowed money from a goy. There was another yid who was an orev for it. And the same kind of thing. Here also, the orev paid off the original loiva died. The orev paid off the goy, the goyish lender, before informing the children. And now he comes to the children and demands the payment. Now the question is that the same as the previous case? It's going to be subject to the machlokas of Rav Papa and Rav Huna Brei Devishua. So the Mordechai says to Rav Ashi, no. In this case, it's different. This is what Rav Avimi Mehagrunya said in the name of Rava. This case would be different. Even according to Rav Huna Brei Devishua, that were concerned that he may have given him tzrori in advance, he may have given him a bundle of money or goods or whatever to pay off the debt, or at least to be a mashkin for the debt. And therefore, we would say that maybe that was already done and the Orev didn't know about it. And again, maybe the Yisomim would have made such a claim if they knew about it and we based and have to advance such a claim on their behalf, etc. Like we talked about before, Hani Mili Yisrael, that would only apply when he borrowed the money from a Yid. Aval Ovid Kechavim, but when it comes to borrowing from a Goy, and as we learned yesterday, the Goyish law in those days was that when you have an orev involved, that the malva can go after the orev first, even before the loiva. Here we've been discussing throughout our sugya that in our halachas, you have to go after the loiva first in most cases, and only if the loiva is unavailable or doesn't want to listen to Beis Din or whatever, then you go after the orev. But in Goyish law, it was the other way around. You went after the orev first. So Ovid Kechavim, Kivin de Bosser Arva Az Ozil, the Goy is anyway going to go and demand the payment from the Orev first. Loi Chashin El Tzrari, then we're not concerned that there may have been, that the father may have given Tzrari, because he knows that, because he knows what good is it going to do to give Tzrari. The Goy is still going to go and try to claim the debt again from the Orev. So he's not even going to bother. He's going to say, I'll leave it up to the Orev to pay, and then the Orev will go and straighten things out himself. So therefore, Sir Mordechai says, on the basis of that, you should say that, yes, the Orev is entitled to be reimbursed by the children. Omalei, but Rav Ashi says, Adraba, on the contrary, I can't accept what you're saying, that what Avimi Mehagrunya said in the name of Rava. We have to say the other way around. Even according to the Papa, who says we're not concerned about there may have been Tzrori involved over here, and the only reason why the Papa patered the Yisomim for the time being from paying is because they're children. Hani Mili Yisrael, on the contrary, you could say that's when it's a Yid who lent the money. Avol Ovid Kechavim, on the contrary, says Rav Ashi, since a Goy, but when it comes to a Goy, Kivin Dininayo Bosa Arva Azli, precisely because they're going to go and demand the payment from the Orev first without even bothering to check whether the Loiva has any Nechosim, Ilav de Apaset Sori Meikra. So if the Loiva hadn't previously given, and if the loiva hadn't previously given some tzrori to the orev meikra from the beginning, loy have a makabalei, then the orev never would have been willing to take on the arevos. Because again, it's one thing when it comes to a Jewish lender, the orev knows he's not necessarily going to be on the hook anyway, only if the loiva skips town or doesn't want to pay or other such things, and the Orev figures that's not so likely. But in the case of a Goyish lender, where Faket, the Orev knows he's going to be on the hook from the beginning, why would he even be willing to take on such a Revos unless he was previously given story that he could then use to pay off the debt when the time comes? So therefore, if there's no story involved, then definitely we would have to say, Rav Ashi says that now on the contrary, since there is the concern that there were tzrori over here, so fine, he may say there's no tzrori, but can we take him at his word? We're gonna have to wait until they grow up, and then when he takes them to Beis Din, then they can make that claim on their own behalves. Our father must have given you tzrori, otherwise how would you have become an orev in the first place? And then we'll go from there. Okay. The Mishnah continued. So in summary, in short, in other words, when an orev pays back and in place of the loiva, if the loiva has now passed away and there are yisoyim involved, then it's not so simple for the orev to be able to collect. Sometimes yes, sometimes not. Depends on the exact circumstances. Ultimately, we said the halacha is like Rav Huna Bar Yehoshua. It's a matter of whether there was tzrori or not, and we're saying there's a difference in that regard, whether the Jewish lender or a goyish one. The Mishnah had continued. Reb Shimon Gamliel Omer Ha'orev LeIshev Ksubasa V'Chola. Reb Shimon Gamliel had said another din in the Mishnah, and here the halacha is like him, that an orev for a wife's ksuba. We said when the ksuba is being paid off, then when the orev is paying that off, then what we should do is we should have the husband take a neder al das rabim that he's never going to remarry her, because otherwise what's going to happen is the orev is going to pay off the ksuba when the husband divorces her, and then they're going to get back together, the husband and wife, and then they've done a knunya, and then they pull the skin on the orev and made him pay when it was not necessary, where they only did the divorce as a sham thing in order to be able to collect the ksuba. So the Gemara tells a story. Moshe bar Atzri arba d'ksubasa d'kal sehavim. Moshe bar Atzri, that was his name, was the orev for his daughter-in-law's ksuba. Interestingly, this is the only this seems to be the only person mentioned in all of Shas, other than Moshe Rabbeinu, of course, whose name was Moshe. Anyway, it seems in those times the name Moshe was not very commonly used. But at any rate, this is the only one. This is the only bearer of that name. Anyway, so he was the orev of his daughter-in-law's ksuba. Now, Rav Huna Brei, Moshe's son, Rav Huna, Tzurim and Abanan Hava, was a young Talmud Chacham, Udchikalei Milsa, and he was having a hard time of it. He was very poor, so he could really use the extra money. Amar Abaya, so Abaya says, Leka de Nazel de Nasve, Eitzalot Rav Huna, isn't there anybody who can go and give Rav Huna the following advice? De Nigrishal Devesu, what he should do is he should divorce his wife. She's going to go collect her ksuba from her father, because her father is the orev and Rav Huna can't afford to pay it. And then Rav Huna, the son, will remarry her in that way. It comes out that they've been able to collect the ksuba without, and then they'll get remarried. Amalei Rava, so Rava says that's exactly the case of the Mishnah. And v'hol yadurena hanotnan. What do you mean? The Mishnah says that he should make her take a neder of hanah. He should take a neder that she will never have hanah from him, and take that neder. I'll das rab him, and only then does such a thing work. So Rav Huna would not be able to remarry her. Amalei Abaya, so Abaya answers back. Otu kol demagarish beidin magarish. Do you think that everybody who divorces does so in Beis Din? He could arrange the get privately, not in the presence of Beis Din. Or maybe Rabbeinu Gershom says maybe it means in the presence of a Beis Din shel hadyotis, which aren't necessarily going to know that particular din. The point is, in other words, that this way, so he'll be able to do this. He'll be able to collect the ksuba, and nobody will be the wiser. Yes, the Mishnah says yadurena hana, but that's when Beis Din knows about it. He'll just make sure that he evades the knowledge of Beis Din about it. Now, how could Abaya give such an advice to scam Moshe Ba'atzvi out of money? We'll talk about that in a couple of lines of the Gemara. But first, the Gemara deals with, so what did they eventually do this? Well, L'soifi Glai Milsa to Koyin, who in the end it turned out it's not going to work. Rav Huna is a Koyin. So therefore, so it's not going to work. If he divorces her, even like this, only for the sake of getting the ksuba, he's never going to be able to remarry her. So the whole plan fell apart. Amar Abaya. So Abaya said, "Hainu da Amri Inchi." You know, this is like people have the expression, "Boser Anya Azla Aniyusa." Poverty follows the poor. In other words, you often have a person is poor, and then other things happen to him that make him even poorer. So the same way over here. Here, a poor Rav Huna is poor, and here we had a great idea how to get him 200 zuz, and now in the end it doesn't work out. So it's like his mazel. Well, the Gemara asks me, "Amar Abaya Hachi? How could Abaya even say in the first place that we should try this? That we should try this kind of trick?" But Amar Abaya, didn't Abaya himself say, "Ezehu Rosha Orum"? What is an example of a crafty Rosha, which is mentioned in Sota as one of the kinds of people who destroy the world? We learned this actually earlier in our Masechta as well. So what is an example of Rosh Ha'orum is where he's causing, he's getting involved in something that's not his business, and he's causing something to be bottle that should have been. So that would be, for example, we learned earlier in the Masechta, we have the case where a person gives a matana and says, Acharecha l'ploini, he says, I'm giving you this matana, but it's only for your lifetime. After you die, I want it to go to ploini. So we said, Reb Shimon Gamliel had said that if the first Makabel sells it, then it works. But if somebody gives him advice to sell that, even though legally he has the right to, such a person is called a Rosh Ha'orum. You're getting involved in something that's not even your business, that you're not even gaining from, and you're causing that the original giver's rotzen is being canceled because he wanted ultimately that it should go to the second person, to the person with acharecha, and here you're preventing that. So by the same token over here, Rav Huna, if we pull this whole trick over here, then here Rav Huna is collecting money from his father Moshe, which he shouldn't, and Abaye is the one saying that he ought to be given advice to do that. So isn't that a problem according to Abaye himself? How could we even think of giving him such advice? The answer is Bnoi Shiny with Survim and Abonon Shiny, because it's different where it's his own son and where his son is a Talmud Chacham, where in general Talmud Chacham usually live on a tiny budget because they're learning Torah most of the time. So that kind of case would be an exception, and you would be able to give advice to do such a thing. So the Yad Rama points out, and this is how it is la halacha, that in order for that to work, in order for us to be able to use that heter, it would in fact have to be both that the son, that it's his son, and that the son is a Talmud Chacham, and only then would he be able to do that. Otherwise, yes, like Abaye says, it would be a Rosh Ha'orum, it would be a crafty Rosh who would give such advice. So the Gemara asks, how does this work anyway? V'ha orev hu, wasn't this Moshe bar Atzvi only an orev? V'kaimalon, and we know lahalacha, the orev d'ksuba lo mishtabed, that when a person takes on arevos for a ksuba, he doesn't actually take on a shibud like that. As the Gemara is going to explain soon why. So as an orev, basically the Gemara is going to explain that as an orev, he's putting himself in place of an orev to make it possible so that the wedding can go through, but not necessarily is he actually accepting a responsibility on himself. So how anyway would we be telling how, suppose the plan had worked, suppose that Rav Huna wasn't a Kohen and we would have been able to make this plan work, how anyway would Rav Huna's wife be going to her father and saying, please pay off my ksuba, when he didn't take that responsibility just by virtue of being an orev? The answer is Kabbalon Habba. The answer is Moshe wasn't just a regular Orev, he was an Orev Kabbalon, and that's different, as we learned on Omer Aleph. Well, the question is, well, that works according to the opinion that when it comes to a ksuba, the one who takes on the responsibility of a kabbalon, then, and he's willing to do that, even if the husband has no nechosim, that the kabbalon is still taking on a shibud and is going to be on the hook to pay off the ksuba if the husband can't, shapir, well, then this works out nicely, because that was exactly the case where Rav Huna couldn't afford to pay it. But there is an opinion that only if the husband has, at the time of the wedding, has nechosim, from which the ksuba could be paid off, then the kabbalon is willing to take on that responsibility. But if not, then not, because then the kabbalon realizes that there's a good chance that he might actually be on the hook for it. My ikal meimar. Then what are you going to say? The fact is, Rav Huna to begin with didn't have this kind of assets. Otherwise we wouldn't be going after Moshe Ba'atzvi in the first place. The Rav Huna himself would be selling. They would be collecting from Rav Huna's own properties. And of course, and even if he had sold them, of course, they would still be under a shibud and she'd collect from them as well. So the answer is two answers. One possibility is maybe Rav Huna did originally have karka at the time when the ksuba was written, but then those karkois were ruined. Shtadruf means there was a shidofen, there was a blast of wind or whatever that damaged them. So we can say that Moshe did take on the responsibility of a kabbalon, because fine, his son did have nechosim at the time. He fully expected that his son would eventually be able to pay off the ksuba from that if necessary. In the event, so something happened, a natural disaster, where now that karka is not available anymore. Another answer is when it's a father to a son, he's willing to be meshabed himself, even if his son has no karka at all.
If indeed this land got ruined, and that's basically like a chrayus on that, but that particular field, then he's off the hook for paying the ksuba because only this piece of land was.
No. In general, when a person so he takes responsibility that any land that he owns is going to be used to pay the ksuba. In this case, he physically can't because the land is not available. The land exists, but it's not worth as much as it used to. So, if he were to give her all the land, it wouldn't pay off all the ksuba. Therefore, we're going to go to the father. We're going to go to the kablan and then collect it from him instead.
Okay.
Yeah. So Tosfos points out, by the way, that in this case, once we say that, it would actually be, then we don't even require, if it's a father to his son, then we don't even require him to be a kablan. The fact that that's a father to his son, a regular orev is enough to put him on the hook to pay it if the son can't pay. We wouldn't, if it was a third party, we would require him to be a kablan in order for that to happen, but otherwise not. Anyway, so those are two answers. So de itmar. Now we said there's machloikas on that point whether a kablon has to whether the kablon takes that responsibility even if the chosin has no nechosim. So that's in fact the machloikas de itmar. There are in fact different dinim in that regard. Orev de ksuba divre hakol amishtabed. If it's a ksuba involved and he just says I'm going to be an orev, then everybody agrees that's not he's not taking on any kind of achrayus on it. He's basically just saying that I'm willing to help out with the wedding, but not that he's actually taking on arevus, as the Gemara will explain in a minute. Kablon de bal choiv divre hakol amishtabed. And if it was on the other hand, if it was a loan of money and he says that as a kablon, no question that he has a shibur, and as we learned on Omer Aleph, there might even be cases where you can collect from him first. Kablon de ksuba v'orev de bal choiv pligi. When it comes to a ksuba, and he says that he's an orev, and he says that he's a kablon, or it comes to a regular choiv and he says that he's an orev pligi, then there's an argument on that. One opinion says if to begin with the loiva has nechosim, the loiva or the husband, as the case may be, has nechosim at the time that the arevus is being taken on mishtabed, then the orev is taking on that shibur. And if not, then not, because then the orev is going to think to himself, there's too much of a chance that I'm going to end up being on the hook to pay this. Or marasava bein isle bein less the mishtabed. Whereas the other opinion holds either way, he's willing to take on that shibud. So now, in our case, again, the case was that he was a kablon, but it was a ksuba. So that's when we're saying that there's a machloikas there would be a machloikas on that point whether he would take on that chiyuv. And one answer was we said that in fact Rav Huna did have property at the time, but that it was wound. And the other answer is it's different when the kablon is the father. And so the Gemara finishes off the Hilchasa, Orev, the halacha is like this. When it comes to a debt, so the rule is like this. Out of the four possible cases that we said, we have Orev versus Kablon, and we have a Choy versus a Ksuba. In three out of those four cases of an Orev, Ben Isle, Ben Less than Ishtabed, whether the loiva or the husband has nechosim at the time that the responsibility is being taken on, then the orev is mishabed himself. Now, in the case of a regular orev, it still means that he won't be having to pay unless the loiva skips town or whatever. But the point is that he is taking on that his chayvus in the first place. Bar me orev de ksuba, with the exception of an orev, not a kablon, but just a regular orev of a ksuba, the afagav de isle labal le mishtabed, even if the husband has nechosim at the time of the wedding, nevertheless, the regular orev for a ksuba is not mishtabed himself. My time mitzvah hu da'ovad, because in that case he's doing a mitzvah by the woman is willing to get married knowing that there was an orev v'lav midi chosra, and she's not actually losing anything thereby. She's not giving out money for that. Unlike a loiva is actually giving out money on the orev say so. So she's not. And then the truth is really even if he hadn't been willing to be an orev, she would probably have been willing to get married anyway, because after all, as the Gemara mentions in a number of places, women do want to get married. So when he takes on the arevus, doesn't really mean that he's actually, so he's saying, I'm an arev, but he's not actually taking on a responsibility. So even if the husband has nechosim at the time, And then nevertheless, we would still say that he's not actually taking on any obligation, and therefore that would mean that if the husband eventually does not pay up, then this ksuba, then in such a case we can't go after the orev and make him pay, because the fact is he would say to begin with, I never really accepted that responsibility. I was just doing it in order to facilitate the wedding to be able to happen. But when he's a Kabbalah, and then you could, which was the case of Moshe Bar-Atzvi over here, which is why Abaya had thought that we could make it work, and it would have worked if it hadn't been that Rav Huna was a Kohen. Interesting thing in this regard, by the way, there's a tshuva printed in Tshuvas Maharam Rutenberg, but it actually comes from Rashi, about a case where there was a shidduch, where a couple had made a shidduch, and they left an eruvin, they left a mashkin in a third party's hand, so that if either side breaks the shidduch, then the mashkin will be forfeit. So now one of the sides decided to back out and not go through with the wedding. So one Talmud thought that in that case we apply the din over here, orev d'ksuba lo mishtabed, and the whole thing is an asmachta. And Rashi says very sharply that this Talmud who decided that has completely misunderstood the whole sugya over here. And that an orev of a ksuba can be under a shibud in some cases, and that this has nothing to do with kablonos of ksuba. And he goes on and says that the Rashi says at the end of this tshuva over here that you know what you have to. You have to penalize this Talmud for paskening this way, and even physically chastise him. And the Talmud is the Talmud who got involved over here is not giving kavod to the Torah, and he's involved in helping out people who are doing wrong by backing out of a deal, and then trying to and whatever. Anyway, the point is, Rashi says some very sharp lashonis over there about this Talmud who paskened this, and about the people who are demanding that the Eirovin be forfeit. Rashi says absolutely not. That's not what we mean over here when we say that an orev of a ksuba is not meshabed himself. Okay. So we'll continue tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem. We're talking about various other dinim involving arevim and involving various other dinim like that. And then we're more to the point. Actually, we'll start by talking about things. We talked about a shivra, about we talked about a person before he dies. We don't know whether a debt is still outstanding, so we're going to talk more about that tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem.